of December, 12-12, the year 2001. We are continuing our study of Maseches Megillah. We're on Daf Yud Beis Omid Aleph.
Yeah.
And we are going through the Megillah word by word, phrase by phrase, item by item. Okay? And this is the reason why I schlepped out the text of the Megillah, so that we can follow it a little more easily, perhaps. Okay? Oh, thank you. What is this? Ah, about Valerian. Right. Right. Yeah. Okay. We are now explaining what is the meaning of Adar v'Sochores, which if you take a look in the Megillah book that we have, it's the bottom of page 89, the last two words over there in the middle of the line. Okay? So, what is Adar v'Sochores? So, Birnbaum, in his translation, which is the volume that we have over here, he translated it as Mother of Pearl and Costly Stones. This is how he translated it. But the Gemara, of course, gives a different interpretation because it's interested in a drash. All right. So, Vedava Socharis. What is the meaning of these two words? Well, again, there is, as we see, a difference of opinion between Rav and Shmuel. Rav Omar, he said that the word dar in Socharis means dore dore, which in Aramaic means row upon row. In other words, there were many, many different rows set up for all the participants, okay? So this is how he translates. Good evening, Sal. How are you? It's good to see you.
Can you tell us where we are in the lot?
Yes. Yud Beis.
Okay.
Omid Aleph.
Right.
Okay, we are a little bit past the two-thirds. Okay, Vedavis Socharis. You see over there on the side it says Zacharia in the... you see Zacharia test over there? In the margin.
Yeah.
In the margin. Look in the margin.
Yeah,
the right margin.
Zacharia?
Yeah, it says Zacharia test over there, okay. That was actually Avdei Nesim is Dos Sosos, which we explained on the previous tape last week, okay. So, Vedavis Socharis is a continuation from last week, okay. So, one translation is Vedavis Socharis, so he says Dar is related to the Aramaic word Dore, which means rose.
Okay.
And with Socharis, so Rashi says Socharis, that too, we have the expression Sechor Sechor, which means going around in circles. So in other words, if they had, you know, like a great big party with rows and rows upon for the various participants or whatever it was. Or maybe it was in connection with the pavement that we were talking about before with the precious stones, that they had row upon row of precious stones in the floor over there. So that's Rav's interpretation. But as we'll see, Shmuel has a different interpretation. Shmuel Omar, right, Evan Tova, he says, no, you know what it is? It is actually, it's a very precious jewel, Yesh Bekrake Hayom, which you can find in the great cities that border on the sea, the Dara Shmuel. And he says, the name of this type of precious stone is called Dara. Okay? And what did they do with this stone? He says, Hoshiva b'emsa se'uda. He put the stone in the middle of the banquet. U'me'ira lahem k'tzoharayim. And the result was that it gave as much light to them. And remember, this is the night time we're talking about. But it lit up for them. It gave them so much light as if it were noon. So this is another interpretation of what we mean by Dar v'Sochores. Okay, of course the question is how do they get it? So if we take a look at the Rashi, he says, Dar, okay, he says it's a precious stone, right? And it's called Dara. And what about Sochores? So he says, that's related to the word, take a look at Rashi, about the sixth line from the bottom over there, it says, Loshan Sahara. Now what is Sahara? Sahara is another name for the moon. Okay, in other words, it gave light at night just as the moon does. Okay? And of course, you're right. You can figure out why is the desert called the Sahara Desert? The answer is because it was named after the moon. I guess they figured it looked like a moonscape over there or something. So,
plain and white.
Yes, right. Yeah. So, that's the origin. Right, that's the origin of it.
Isn't that
right. Yes. All right. Now, the next thing that they discuss, all right, if you take a look, the last line on page 89, it says, Vashkos Bechle Zahav, right? It says that what? The drinks were served in golden cups, right? The Chedim and Kedim Shonim, and he translated it as golden cups of various patterns, right? And then it says, V'yein Malchus Rav Kiyah HaMelech, and the wine that the king was serving, right? The king was generous with the amount of wine that he was serving, right? Even as Birnbaum translated, wine was in plenty according to the bounty of the king, all right? Now again, we're going to see how the Gemara takes this particular verse, okay? All right.
Before we go ahead, what language was Sahara?
Aramaic, but also we find it in Hebrew.
Aramaic and Hebrew.
Right, right. And yeah, we do find the word in the Bible too. Sahara.
Carried over into Egypt.
So the Hebrew and Aramaic you find it. Yeah. And probably in Arabic it probably is a similar word. Yeah. Okay. All right. So now we're describing the drinks. Okay. Yeah, wait a minute. I skipped one line.
No, don't worry.
Okay, I skipped one line. The same thing. Rabbi Shmuel, the school of Rabbi Shmuel, gave a different interpretation. What was it? Davis of Horus? He says, Tana, they taught the following, that Shekora Dror, the Chol Baale Sechora, okay? In other words, what is Davis of Horus? Dar is related to the word Dror, which means freedom. And Socheris reminds him of the word Schora. Yeah. In other words, all the merchants were given a tax break.
Where are you on this?
They Rabbi Yishmael, Tana, right? In other words, he gave freedom to all the people who were busy in selling merchandise. In other words, he did not collect any tax. There was no sales tax, okay?
Right.
All right. Then the next word is Vashkos Bechle Zahav. The Chedim Mekedim Shonim, right?
I don't follow the abatement. What is he calling the abatement of the
sales tax. He gave a
Dror, dar, he relates to the word dror, which means freedom.
Oh, instead of this interpretation.
Right.
The
different interpretation.
Different.
We had Rav, we had Shmuel, and now he quotes the opinion on this particular verse of the school of Rabbi Yishmael.
Oh.
So we have three different interpretations as to what these two words mean.
Okay, I see.
Dar.
Right.
It's so geared to this interpretation that we're reading so many years in the English. That it's very strange suddenly to hear these other
things. Right,
I'm sorry, I missed this. The first interpretation about the stones that sort of were like a pennon on
Rav said it was Dore, all right, which means rose and rose, right?
Uh-huh.
And what he do with Socheris, it doesn't mention over here, but Rashi says Socheris is related to the word Skorskor, which means round and round. In other words, that the stones and the pavement that we had spoken about just previously, it was just inlaid with rows and rows upon precious stones. Okay? That was Rav's interpretation. Shmuel gave you the story about the precious stone which lit up everything, and that's how he translated Dar, said it's related to a word Dara, which is the name of that stone, and Selchoros is related to the word Sahar, which means the moon. Okay, in other words, it gave light that was as precious as the moon at night. Okay,
And then the school of
Rabbi Yishmael came along and they said, no, why is it called Dar Sepharis? Because it means that, you know, King Ahasuerus was so happy with the big party that he had made that he gave to Ror, right? In other words, a release, right? To Sepharis, in other words, to the people who were paying, who were merchants, okay? So that people did not have to pay tax on the merchandise.
They gave him a tax holiday.
Well, that was probably since he was giving the party to win the goodwill of the ambassador.
Yeah, so he gave them an abatement, right.
Gave the abatement to the Khazari people.
Yes. All right. But on the other hand, what do we read in the last chapter of the Megillah? That he imposed a tax upon everybody, okay? So obviously, all the parties and the expenditures on his army and everything else cost plenty, and so at the end, what did he have to do? He had to raise a tax and so on. And so that was one of the interpretations. What is the meaning of the name Ahasuerus, where he said that they made everybody into Russia, they made everybody poor, right, by imposing taxes upon them. Okay.
Things haven't changed that much.
No,
definitely not. We have prosperity, and then it's taken away.
Well, that is absolutely right.
Like our
yes, yes. Congress is debating that problem right now. As a matter of fact, you know, whatever happened to the tax cuts that had been promised to us? Well, now they say that they needed in order to carry on war against terrorism, etc., etc. Okay. Yeah. Okay, so now the next words, as we said, we're dealing now with the drinks. Vashkos bechlei zahav, right? That the drinks were in golden vessels. Well, we'd already said before that, you know, the vessels were vessels that Ahasuerus had taken from the temple treasury, the Beis HaMikdash, right? But we've already mentioned that, so he doesn't have to mention it again. But then it says, "V'chelim bekelim shonim," that the various vessels that they used were different one from another, had all different types of vessels. So, the Gemara says, "Mishonim miboyle." If it wants to say different, it should use the word "mishuda," okay, and not "shoda," okay. Because the word shona may be understood in a different way, and this is now what Rava is going to say. So, Rava said, why does it say shonim and not mishunim? You understand? Why does it say that? So he says, Yotzes habatz kol v'amru lahem, right? Because a batz kol, in other words, a heavenly voice, came and said to the Jews, or is that to the people who were assembled at this dinner, at this banquet, right? And what it said, Mishonim kalu b'pnei kelim. The earlier generation, meaning of course Belshazzar, right? They came to, they were destroyed, right? Because of the vessels that they had used that had come from the Beis HaMikdash, right? The Atem Shonim Bohem. And you are repeating it. Shona in Hebrew is another verb which means to do something a second time. In other words, it's also related to the word sheni.
Oh, okay.
Or mishnah.
Right.
So the word shona, and mishonim, aren't they connected? Mishonim, those are not connected?
Of course they are.
Like
but there's another meaning to the word shona.
Okay,
right.
But there are different parts of speech, actually, or different grammatically.
Well, mishonim is an adjective,
right? Yeah.
Shonim is, here it certainly uses an adjective
noun.
Also.
Yeah. Well,
no, it's used as an adjective over
an
here.
Adjective.
Okay. It can also be a noun, shonim, in the sense that you make a change or something like that.
Yeah.
You see, there has... Hebrew, you see, when you get immersed in the language, you realize that the same word can be understood very often in more than one way.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
And the word shoneh, the meaning is to repeat something, to go over it a second time. And therefore, we use it also in the sense, for example, of a person who is learning that he reviews again and again and again. This is also shoneh, right? So that has various meanings, okay? But here he's using it in the sense they came, they were destroyed because, and you are repeating exactly the same thing that they did.
I think what Sylvia is getting at is that the
Yeah, that means to make a change.
To change.
Correct.
Right.
Correct.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the word mishuna is the passive adjective.
But who is saying this to him?
But also
the Baal Kol.
The
heavenly voice.
Okay.
Right. Today in modern Hebrew, as you know better than I, mishuna means sort of like curious. Is a curious.
Mishuna. Strange, curious, whatever.
Now,
right.
Would that have any bearing on this, or just that's just the modern derivation has no relevance?
Put it
to
always. A word should always be in its context.
Uh-huh.
Because that's the way you have to understand it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay, so we'll put away that interpretation.
Yeah.
You have to know the context in which you're using the word in order to get the right interpretation. Okay?
Well,
I mean,
same,
in English,
you know,
I could point out a few things.
Say, in
too.
English,
right.
It's exactly the same thing. I mean, you can have words that are spelt exactly the same, but they are pronounced differently, and they have different meanings altogether.
Oh, well.
You know,
R-E-A-D. We would say read, but it's also
read.
Right. And on the other hand, you hear the word read, you can also be thinking of what? Of R-E-D.
Right.
You understand? So,
I was thinking of B-O-W. Bow and bow.
That's right.
And then there's B-O-U-G-H, which is also bow.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, the English language has
right.
The sense of
yeah.
So it's a
bow
call, huh?
Right. It's a heavenly voice. That's it. You're repeating the same thing that happened, right? Which means, in other words, you're also on the path of destruction.
Of destruction, right?
Right. Okay.
I think you're right. I mean, in the context that seems to be
right. Then. The next words of the same sentence is V'yein Malchus Rav, right? And the wine of the kingdom was much, okay? And there was a great deal of wine of the kingdom. So Amar Rav, so what does he do with these three words? So Rav said, Nelame, the teachers, Shekol Echot V'yechot Ishkohu Yayin Shegodol Imedu Nishonim, okay? It teaches us, he says, that each person who was there drinking wine at the Suda, so Achashverosh served him wine that was older than he as far as years are concerned. Okay? In other words, you
well
know.
Well-aged wine.
Right. Now, how is he getting it from the word Rav? Because the Rav Yavot Tayir, right? Remember where that is? The Rav Yavot Tayir. Right, of course. In other words, Esav, who was Rav, who was the older one in years, right? He would serve Tayir, you know, the younger one, meaning Yaakov, okay? So Rav, in this context then, according to the interpretation of Rav, right? So that's it, you know. Okay. All right. Then it's written what? Right after that, it's written Hashasiyah Kados, right? Which means, and the drinking was according to the Das. Now, Das, we use today in modern Hebrew, Dat, we use it as religion, right? But let's take a look again at the translation that Birnbaum gave, okay? That's on the top of 92, where it says the drinking was regulated.
Yeah, I mean,
Kados, in other words, it went according to the rules.
Uh-huh.
The rules of the serving of wine, okay. But again, the Gemara wants to know, my Kados, what do we mean by that? So Rab Chanan said, Mishum Rabbi Meir, in the name of Rabbi Meir, he says, Kados Shel Torah. It went according to the law of the Torah. You ask, what law of the Torah? So he explains. He says, Ma doshel Torah, inasmuch as there's a law in the Torah which says that achila meruba mishasiyo, that eating is in greater quantity than drinking. So absuto so shalosa rosha. So likewise, the banquet of that wicked person achila meruba mishnasiyah. Okay, there was more food served than wine even. And we said, you know, wine was plentiful, so we can imagine how much there was to fress at the seudah, okay, at the banquet that he gave. Okay. Now, of course, the question is, where in the Torah do we see that there's more food than there is drink? So the answer is, believe it or not, it's in connection with the korbanos. With korbanos, with sacrifices. What do we find? Well, we find, you know, that you have to slaughter, let's say, an ox, a calf, a sheep, or something like that. So in other words, plenty of meat, right? And then what do you have to do? You have to pour a libation of wine. And that is a small, you know, a serious way for us, or what I mean, the hin, chatzi ha-hin, and so on and so forth. Hin is the liquid measure, and A4 could either be liquid or a solid measure, okay? But at any rate, you know, for a big sacrifice, right, nevertheless, there's only a smaller amount of wine which is poured as a libation on the altar. So that shows that he gave more food than he gave even drink. Okay. Alright. Then the next two sentences, the next two words are ain't no nace, which means there's nobody to force them. In other words, what? Everybody was free to do what? To have as much as he wanted, right? Well, how did they understand it over here?
So it's the opposite. Really, the drinking was regulated. There was no compelling to drink.
Well, we'll see how he interprets. He says, "Eino neis." Omer Rabbi Elozer. Rabbi Elozer said, "The Lamed teaches us that she called echod v'yechod hishkehu miyein medinosa." All right, teaches us that eino neis, that there is no compulsion. It means he says that everybody was served the wine of the area from which he came. I mean, we know that there are Italian wines, French wines, California wines, New York State wines, and so on and so forth. All right. So wherever a person came from, he was served the wine that he was familiar with. So that's what he means by Enodes. You were not forced to drink the wine of a different region, but instead, you were served specifically the wine that you were familiar with and that you liked to drink. Okay? So that's Enodes. Okay?
Which was Jews can, because there was no wine from.
Pardon me?
What choice did Jews have?
They had, I guess, caramel wine, maybe.
Right. Didn't
they came from Italy, so...
They didn't prepare kosher meat for them either.
Right. They came from Italy, so they had Bartonura wine, right?
You know, I'm just wondering if you wanted to make a kind of strange interpretation.
Yeah.
Considering the history of Vashti, if they're being honest, there's no rape. See, so it's a well behaved party.
Yeah.
But,
we'll come to Vashti in a few minutes.
Right,
okay. All right. We haven't forgotten.
What is,
okay.
Does that word mean rape?
Honest, actually, in
its yeah, yeah, it could rape, mean. It absolutely. Could mean also rape.
Well,
right.
Could that mean then that it has something to do with they're not, if you were taking that interpretation at all? It would mean that they did not, they really didn't drink to drunkenness because they had some control over how much they were
It's a very nice interpretation, but nobody accepts it except David.
It's amazing. You got this all locked. Wow, this is wonderful.
The word onus, incidentally, also means simply. But it could also mean. Yeah, like it's a forced result or something like
right,
that.
Okay.
Anyway, then what do we find? Omer Rabbi Elozer, the name is called the other. He's going to be Yemen. Is right. Then the pasuk continues says Lasos Kirtzon Ish for Ish, in order that they should do according to the will of each and every man. That's the literal interpretation, okay? However, there's a drash. What is the drash? So, Omar Rava said, La Soskitson Mordechai Vehoma. Okay? it's that they should do according to the will of Mordechai and Haman. What were they doing over there? They were sort of put in charge of regulating what was going on at the banquet, okay? Mordechai, how do we know that Mordechai was involved? He says, Dichsiv, because it's written, Ishuri. So in other words, Mordechai is an Ish, right? So Lasok is an Ish. Now who is the other Ish? The other one is Haman. How do I know? Because what did Esther say about Haman when she finally revealed herself to the king, to who she was and so on, and how Haman wanted to destroy the Jews? She said, Ish, Tsar V'Yoyev. A man who is an enemy and somebody who hates us, okay? All right, so the question is, so what were they doing over there? Kitzonishvish. So Rashi says, Haim hoyu sori hamashkim b'mishta. In other words, they were the wine stewards at the dinner. They were serving the wine to everybody. So the question is, you know, so what? So we have to say, what did Mordechai want? Mordechai wanted to make sure that there would be kosher food at the dinner, okay? On the other hand, what did Haman want? He wanted to make sure that there wouldn't be kosher food, there would be trefa food served to everybody, okay? Because, if you remember, the question which we had a week or two ago was, you know, one of the reasons why were the Jews punished, you know, with threatened with death? What sin had they committed? So one interpretation was the fact, you know, that they enjoyed themselves at the dinner that Achashverosh gave. Mainly if they came because they were compelled to, but they didn't have to enjoy it so much. Right, as the Yiddish expression is, in other words, that the eating, let's say, all the pig's meat and so on, that, you know, that they enjoyed it so that the juices were running down their beards and so on. That they didn't have to do. Of course, that was one interpretation of that time. Okay. Yeah, right. And then they said, so why, you know, the other Jews? So therefore, when they came up with a different reason, why? And then it says, Shishtachu Matzelim, that they bowed down to the idol that Nebuchadnezzar had made and ordered all the subjects of his kingdom to bow down to it. And who refused? It was Hanani, Mishael, and Azariah. They refused. So presumably, if they refused, but the other Jews gave in, right? But then the Gemara, if you remember, said, yeah, but in the final analysis, they did it, they didn't mean it. You know, they were only doing it outwardly, but not
right,
inwardly.
Right,
right, yeah. Okay. Now, the next passage says, Gam Vashti Hamalka, right? That's the third line that you have over there on page 91 or 92. Right? Gam Vashti Hamalka, also saw Mishnei Nashim, right? So it's written, also Vashti, Queen Vashti, made a banquet for the women. And where was it held? It was in the Beis Hamalchus, in the royal house, literally, okay? So the first thing that the Gemara adds over here is, it says, Beis Hanoshim Boyle. She should have held her dinner, her banquet for the women. Where? In the women's quarters. What was she doing over there in the men's quarters? You understand? So Omar Rava, so Rava said, Shnehem Ledvar V'Liskavnu, right? You know what? He says, both of them, both Vashti and Achashverosh, really, they wanted to sin. Sin in what way? You know, live what we would call an open lifestyle today, if you know what I mean. In other words, adultery is no longer adultery. Right, right. It's no longer adultery. Right.
So this is putting the onus on Vashti.
Yeah, right, right.
Yeah.
Right.
Do you want
to? The Gemara has a little.
She objects to. I mean.
Well, we'll come to that.
I know.
So obviously, if right.
Yeah, I mean.
So the question is, why did she object? That we'll see in another moment. Okay.
She had to recognize, you know, at a certain moment.
Okay. So far we've established now that both of them, right, both of them were no great paragons of virtue, okay? Neither of them, okay? Hanan Amar Yinshe, and this is in line with a marshal, with a proverb that people say, Yehu Bekare, the Yinshe Butzina, that he likes big squash, let's say, and she likes little squash. But the point is, they both like squash. The squash. Okay.
Can I ask you a question without getting? I don't want to get into this too deeply. But I thought, I'll just stir up trouble here. She's with women, right? So what exactly in your mind is going on? I mean, it can't be adultery.
Well, wait a
minute. Yeah. All right.
Lesbian kind of.
Well, wait a minute. She's in the men's. We're saying she's with women, but she's in the men's.
That's
we already did. Okay, this is the next one over here.
Who's saying Rob saying this?
Yeah, that's true.
But the whole point is that I'm getting very disillusioned here. I thought poor Vashti, she was done wrong.
Right.
Well, she held it just for the women.
Okay. We are now on the next slide. Okay.
Whoever
needs.
It's there, though. But
Goldie?
But the Talmud is inferring something else here. I don't know.
That's what Talmud is telling us. Talmud is telling us that
she was no tzaddikus
either.
Exactly.
Right, right. Okay.
Who is the tzaddikus?
Vashti was not a tzaddikus. That's what the Gemara is saying.
Right.
Okay.
Well,
all right.
Find out.
Yeah. All right. So we're now on the next side of the page. We're now on Yud Beis, Omid Beis. All right. Second word. It's written in the Megillah by Yom HaShvi'i on the seventh day. Ketov Lev HaMelech Vayoyim. When the king's heart was good, literally. In other words, he was happy with the wife. So the Gemara asked the following question.
So he was drunk for 7 days.
And how? And what about the 180 before? You know. So the Gemara says, Atu ad hashtal itav libe bechamra. You mean to say that until this very moment he wasn't happy with his wine? So Amar Rava, so Rava said, now, the meaning of by Yom HaShvi'i is a different thing. You know what Yom HaShvi'i means? Yom HaShvi'i, Shabbos Hoya. The seventh day, actually, the banquet was on Shabbos. And it says, take a look at the difference between Goyim and Eden. It says, Shei Yisrael Oichlin, right? When Jews eat, Vishoysen, and they drink, right? On Shabbos, after all, it's a mitzvah to eat and to drink. So, Maschilin, Midivrei Torah, Udiri Tishbochis. So, what do the Jews do? They, when they feel good and happy on Shabbos, so that they learn different Torah, right? They learn Torah, they sing all kinds of songs of praise to the Rebbeinu Shel Olam, right? This is what Shabbos is on the seventh day for the Yid. Aval all day kechavim, but the Goyim, he says, she'oichten v'shoysen, when they eat and they drink, you know what happens? Ein matzchil lo medivrei tiflus. They, what do they do? They begin to talk dirty and to do all kinds of lewd things and things like that. Okay. Right. V'chein b'sudo seishalais in Russia, and this is what happened, incidentally, at the banquet that wicked man gave. Halalo omrim. Some of the guys over there at the banquet said, "Modayas nois." It's the women of Media. Who are beautiful, right?
Media,
okay.
The most beautiful.
Yeah, I guess that they wanted to get publicity in the media or something
media,
like that.
Yeah, that's right.
Omrim, and others say, Parsios Noahs, the Persian women are the beauties, right? So Omalehem Achashverosh, so Achashverosh said to these guys, you know, who are arguing whether the women of Media or Persia are the more beautiful. He says, you know what? He says, Kli shani mishtamesh bo, the vessel that I make use of, ain't no lo modai velo pasi. She is neither a medium nor is she a Persian. Elo casting. But you know what? She is Chaldean. In other words, she's a Babylonian.
He calls her a vessel?
You can see, I mean, that obviously it's a term of contempt for his wife, okay?
Obviously.
Yeah, obviously.
It's like a piece of
Yeah. I mean, that she's a keli, you know. She's there. She's a repository for all the strangers. What shall I say?
The word Farsi, as far as Persian language.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, right? Of course. Absolutely. Yeah.
She was not what?
No, he's asking about the meaning of the word Parsi.
Parsi, yeah.
So I get
Parsi,
Parsi. My little business about Valerian. This would be a good opportunity.
You want to give Valerian? Time out for Valerian. All right. Time out for Valerian.
Okay, perfect.
Jane Reiter. All right. So, all right. So, in the so right now, we see that there's an argument going on as to which woman is the most beautiful. Are they the women of Media or Persia? And Ahasuerus says, listen, my wife is Chaldean, or as I say, Babylonian, and she is even more beautiful, right? So, this is what he said. To say it nicely, instead of the gross words that he used, right? So, and he continues, and he says to them, Zont chem liroso, would you like to see her? Omulo, so they said to him, In, yeah. Uvilvad, however, on condition only, Shetehe Aruma, she has to appear naked.
Who said that?
No, the guys who were talking to Ahasuerus. You know, they take him up on his offer to see her, but they said, yeah, we'll accept your offer, then we'll see her. But she has to be naked, so we can, you know, we can judge. Is she more beautiful than the other women? Okay. Now the Gemara now throws in over here, and it says, you know what? Something incidentally that we learned in Sota. Oh. It's written over there, Shebemida she'odom moided bo moedidin lo, right? That the way a person, dishes out to another person, that's the kind of punishment that he's going to get. Mm. Okay? Melame, it teaches us that Shehoyesor Vashti Horishor Mevia Benos Yisrael Umafshitan Arumas V'yosu Behen Melocha B'Shabbos. Remember it says, Bayom Hashviyi, right, on the seventh day. So, you know what she did that unto Samitka? It says that she would, that wicked Vashti would bring Jewish girls, strip them naked, make them do work on Shabbos. Okay? And I knew the Ksiv, this is then is the meaning of the pasuk where it says, Achar hadvarim ha'ele, after these events, Shoch hamas hamelech ha'chashverosh, when the anger of King Ahasuerus calmed down, Zocharis Vashti, he remembered Vashti, V'yes asher asosa, and everything that she had done, V'yes asher nigzar aleha, and everything that had been decreed concerning her. Kishem she'asasa, right, asher asosa, just as what she had done, so nigzar aleha. This was the punishment that was decreed upon her. Okay? All right. So that's the connection to Bayom Hashviyi. Then it's written, okay, right? But Vashti, Queen Vashti refused, right? She refused to come. So the Gemara says, Michti Pritzotso Halloi. Look, we said just a few minutes ago that what? That she was a Pritzis. In other words, she was what? She was not a modest person. Instead, she was a lewd person to begin with, all right? So why should it bother her to appear naked, right? You understand? Yeah. Why should it concern her to appear naked before these people when she was no great moral character herself? You understand? The Omar, even as we said before, that what? Shnehem and Varavir Niskavnu, right? That both of them were looking, for extramarital enjoyment, okay? Yeah. So my Tamale Asai, so in that case, if she was no modest person, then why didn't she come when the king said, come to the banquet? So Omar Rabbi Yossi Bachanina, says, Melame, this teaches us that Sheparcha bought Saras, that the reason she didn't come is that she suddenly suffered from leprosy. In other words, she broke out with leprous spots all over, and that's why she didn't come. She didn't want to be seen that way. Binas Nisa Tama, and then we have another tradition that has been taught, namely that Bo Gabriel V'yosalo Zodov, that the Malach Gabriel came and he gave her a tail. So obviously she didn't want to appear with a tail. Okay, yes.
I remember reading somewhere that there was this sort of whole dynastic thing going on where Vashti argued somewhat on, Micah did with David, Micah being the daughter of Shiloh, saying, basically, whether she was, if you remember this whole business,
yeah, of course, about Michal, right? Of course, I know, right? Well, we said
who would be the king, who would be the.
We had before that she said to Achashverosh, she says, "You were the guy who used to take care of horses for my father. You groomed the horses for my father. So what kind of a yichus are you, right?
Right. Yeah. So she felt superior to him.
Right.
Find it demeaning.
Yeah.
Well, she just felt superior to him. Period.
Correct. Right. Correct. Absolutely.
Vashti did.
Right.
Well, we learned that earlier. She was of royal.
Right. Because she was descended from Nebuchadnezzar. She was the daughter of Belshazzar, we said, and so on. Right. Correct.
So she wasn't going to take orders from him, even though he was.
All right. Then the Megillah continues and says, "Vayikzev haMelech miyot," and the king became very angry. Right. So the Gemara says, "Am I dolko be kulehai? Why was he burning up so much?" Right. So Amar Rava. So Rava said the reason is sholcholei, that she sent him this message that we just mentioned, namely, "Bar ahurare da Abba." Right. You were the stable boy of my father. Okay?
It's right here. Okay.
Yeah. And not only that, but Abba the Kavel Alpha Chamra Shasi Velo Rabbi. My father was able to drink wine in the presence of 1,000 people,
right,
and at the same time, it was never enough. In other words, to never make him abbreviate. You know,
right,
he had
a wooden leg.
Okay, was able to drink.
The
Ahu Gavra, but that guy, meaning of course Achashverosh, okay, Ishtate Bechavre, right? He became foolish the minute that he drank wine. Okay, for all. What kind of a foolish thing is it to ask me, you know, to appear in public, you know, the way you want me? So obviously, you're a fool, right? You drink and it goes to your head. So miyad, immediately, v'chamosa barabo. So he became very, very angry. Literally, his heat, his fever burnt within him, right? But that's the way we say he became angry. Then, after that, the Omar HaMelech v'chachamim, the king said to the wise men, to his wise men, right? And what did he say? Well, he wants, you know, what to know. He wanted to know, you know, what to do. If you take a look at the text of the Megillah, right? It's in Vayomer HaMelech LaChachamim. See where the break is over there on the page. That the king said to the wise men, you're the Ehoitim, who know how to calculate the time. So something like that. We'll see how to understand, okay?
So,
So first of all, the question that our sages ask is Mount Chachomim. So who are the Chachomim that he consulted with? Rabbanim. He decided to call upon the rabbis. He figured that they certainly know what to tell me what to do, right? How do we know that? Because they are Yodei Hoitim. What does it mean that they know the times? Which means Sheyodein the Avir Shonim. They know how to calculate when it is necessary to have leap years. And actually for that, you have to be a great Chochem in order to know how to do it. Okay? So obviously, Vilik Baruch Hadashim, of course, also to be able to determine when the new months begin. Okay? So.
Did they develop a technique to calculate, or they were witnessing as we were in Rosh Hashanah?
Well, this is why he turned to the rabbis, because he knew that the rabbis had this ability to calculate and to know when it was necessary to make leap year, and also, you know, when to determine when is Rosh Chodesh.
This was already after that. They had already done the calculations. They had learned calculating already.
Was
they weren't witnessing anything. Going to witness,
yeah, but he knew that the Chachamim, this was one of the things that marked the Chacham, okay? So he came to the Jews, we'll see in a second, and after all. Right, yeah. So he says to them, Omar Lahu, he said to them, Dainuhuli, I want you to judge her for me. So Amru Hechinavid. Right. So the Chachamim said to each other, what the heck are we going to do? What shall we do?
Yeah.
If we say to him, all right, executor, right?
Yeah.
So, on the following day, his wine is going to leave him. In other words, he'll sober up. All right, so here they are facing a problem. What are they going to do? What can they say to Ahasuerus, right? So they have to have an answer for him. Yeah. Name Olay Shafka. And should we say to the king, all right, let her go. Forgive her. Right? Kol mezalzel b'malchusa. But nevertheless, she is guilty of what? Of showing contempt for the king. So they had to give an answer to him. So Amru Lo, so they said to Ahasuerus, she says, Miyom Shechor Beis HaMikdosh, from the day that the Beis HaMikdosh was destroyed, they go, Linu Miyatzenu, and we went into exile from our land, Nitla Eitzo Mimenu. You know what? Good counsel has been removed from us. V'yein Ono Yodin Lodun Dinu Nefoshes. And not only that, but we don't know how to judge capital cases. So, in that case, Zilagabe Amon and Moav, go to Amon and Moav. They have people over there that they're set in their ways. The Yasvim to Aihu, that they've been living in their place for years. Kechamra, the Yasav al Dordaye, just like wine, which has been settled on its lees, you know, the schmutz at the bottom of the wine, right? And, dregs, you know, the dregs. Right, the dregs, right. So let them go to the goyim, in other words, let them be responsible for the giving a judgment. All right. The Tama, right? The reason is, Omru Lay, so they said to him, you know what? Dichsiv, we have a pasuk in the Bible. The Bible says, Shanan Moav Minu Rav, right? That Moab has been living peacefully from its very youth. The Shokate, the Shokate who El Shmorav, right? And he is as quiet, you know, as you know, the wine sitting on its dregs, right? Below who rock the Kli El Kli. And not only that, says Yirmiyahu, that this wine has never been poured from one vessel into another. In other words, it's there, that they never had to go and change from Agol Leholach, right? And they never had to go into exile. Okay, no matamo, overrechal no more. So that's the reason why the taste and the fragrance has never been disturbed. They still have the same taste and so on. So, okay. So in other words, don't go to us Jews, but go to Goyim in order to find, you know, people who will advise you what to do with Vashti. Miyad, so immediately, you know what happened? So the next pasuk says, right, v'hakarov v'lov, and those who were near to him were who? Karshana, Shesar, Atmosa, Tarshish, okay? All right. So, in other words, he went to these goyim by the name of Karshanor and Shesar and Anmos and Tarshish, right? However, what kind of names are these? So, Omar Rabbi Levi, Rabbi Levi said, as a matter of fact, I can give you a good Jewish drash on these things. Kol posuk zeh, he says, this entire verse is al shum korbanos ne'emar. In reality, they're talking about the various korbanos that are brought into the Beis Hamikdash. Yeah, karshana. Okay, so omru malachi asher tzliakodesh baruch hu. The ministering angel said to the Holy One, Blessed be He, Rabbeinu Shel Olam, Klum hikruv v'necha korim b'nei shana, kar shana is kar ben shana. In other words, a lamb which is 1 year old, right? Did the goyim ever sacrifice to you korim b'nei shana k'deo shekruv Yisrael v'necha, just as the Jews have done so? So in other words, what are the malachim doing? They are, as we would say, they were malabit chus for the Jewish people, right? They wanted to find, validation for the Jews, to find merit for the Jews. So, Karshana, the name suggests that the Jews sacrificed to the Rebbeinu Shel Olam when the Goyim did not, okay? Shesar, that's the next one. So what is Shesar? Kolom ikrim fanecho shteisorin. Did they ever sacrifice be unto you, that is the goyim ever sacrificed unto you two bulls? Because there are times, you know, when you have to have two bulls, okay, it's a sacrifice, not every day, but bulls, turtle doves. Oh, take it back again. It can be neither one or the other. But you're right, here it means the two doves, because we have, sacrifices in which, they can bring one of them is a sin offering, the other one is a burnt offering, and so on. Okay, right. Ad Mosa, and how about Ad Mosa? Klum bodol fenechem mizbach adoma. Did they ever build, did the great mother build unto you an altar made of the earth, which was commanded in the Torah, after the giving the Ten Commandments? And Tarshish, right? Which is also happens to be the name of what? A precious stone. Klum shimshul fanech bevigdei kahuna. Did the goyim ever serve you wearing the priestly garments? Dichsib behu, concerning which is written, Tarshish v'shoham v'yoshvei. Right, these are all different, precious stones that we find. And how about the next guy, Meris? Right? So, klum merisu bedam fanecha. The blood of the sacrifice had to be stirred so that it shouldn't coagulate before, it was on the altar, before they spritz it on the altar. So that's mersu, so the meris is right. Marsano, klum mersu bimenochos lefanecha. And how about Marsano, the next guy? That's again, what did they do? Did the goyim ever stir the flour, the fine flour that they had to serve together with the oil, which was used the way the Jews have done? This is what we call a mincha, where you have flour which is mixed with olive oil, right? And it has to be stirred, and then, it is offered up, right?
So the mar part is the stirring?
The mar race would mean to stir.
Right, so yeah. The next word, marsana,
right.
It's stirring. So
yeah, well, we have meris and marsana. Okay. So in other words, the two different types of stirring. One is stirring of the blood before it went on the altar, right? And the other one is of the menochos, the flour offerings, the meal offerings, okay? And who is the last guy in line over there? Memuchan, right? What about Memuchan? What does that sound like? It says, Klur mechinu shulchan lefonecho. Did the goyim ever prepare a table before you? In the Beis HaMikdash, you had a table upon which every Shabbos they put the 12 fresh loaves of bread, the showbread, and so on. Okay?
Yeah.
All right. We'll do one more, a couple of more lines, and that's it. Okay. Vayomim Memuchan. So then the text continues, and Memuchan said, he's the one who's giving the etzah to the king. King invites how many people? Seven chachamim, right? But who takes the lead in talking? Mumuchim, right? So, Tana, we have a tradition which says, Mumuchim Zehoman. It says, Mumuchim, actually, he was Haman. The Lama Nikrosh Mumuchim, so why is he called over here Mumuchim? So he says, Shemuchim Furados, because the reason is that he's getting prepared, you know, for all kinds of terrible things that would happen, for punishment. Omer Rav Kahana, and Rav Kahana said, Mikan Shehed Yoit Kofetz Barosh. Okay, we'll stop at that point. From this we learn that a person who is a Hed Yoit, in other words, is an uneducated person or something like that, he likes to jump original and be the first, you know, to give an answer. Okay,
right. The word is hedyot.
Hedyot.
In what language of Hebrew?
Yeah,
yeah. Is that connected with idiot?
Of course it is. Absolutely. Yeah, yeah, the word's right. The original meaning of the word idiot in Greek means an individual.
Oh,
that's interesting. Yeah, idiotics. Yeah, yeah. That was the original meaning of the word. It did not mean necessarily though somebody was mishugah.
So how did
but that
it
was
get?
The.
Oh.
Yeah. You know, words change in meaning too.
Oh, yeah.
Even in Greek, they would change in meaning.
Even in English,
but right, what the Greek idiotes and the Hebrew word hedyot, I mean, obviously the two of them related to each other, right? So hedyot was an individual, right? And all right, let's see, tonight is the what? It's the 18th, 19th already. Today is the 19th of December in the year 2001. Hanukkah has passed, and now we're ready to get into Purim. And we are continuing now in Gemara Megillah. We are now on Yud Beis, Amud Beis, continuing from where we left off last week. Okay. All right. So the next pasuk that they comment on, what was the advice that was given? Not just to get rid of Vashti, but also to do what? To send a decree, circulate a decree among all the provinces, that all the women are to obey their husbands, right? This is the end of the first chapter, if you take a look, on page 93 or 94, if you're following the English, okay? You see it, right? In other words, he sent letters to all the royal provinces in their own script and in their own language and so on, declaring that every man should be the master in his own home. Okay?
Yeah.
And then it says, and speak the language of his own people. Okay. Yeah, I know. It doesn't always work out. But remember, it was Mabuchan who suggested it, okay? Okay. So, alright. Kolish Sarabaveso. Leos Kolish Sarabaveso. So the Gemara comments. Omar Rava. Rava said as follows. He says, Umole, Igore Sarishoinos, Lenishtam Sarim Sarisrael Sarid Ufolit. He says, if it were not for these early letters, according to Rava, the Jews would have not even survived the massacres that have been planned for them. Okay. The question is, what is he referring to? So Rashi gives the following explanation. He says that Ilmola Igor Rishoni says Shehuchzak Bohen Shaita B'Yenei Homos, that when all the various peoples in the empire received the letters that every man should be a boss in his own house, so they all figured this guy's Meshuggah. He's a fool. He's a shaita. Right. Huh? Not Achashverosh. Achashverosh said this, but it was, Mabuchan's decrees. It was, he was the one who suggested it, you understand? Right. Amre. Because what did the people say? They said, my high, which means, so what's all this? The Shadilon, the Yos Kodishtub of Esau, that every man should be a boss in his own home. Pshita, isn't that obvious? Afilu korcha beveise hashadacha leheve, which means that even somebody who is, korcha probably is related to the word kareach in Hebrew, which means somebody who is a baldy, right? But at any rate, what it means is somebody who is a nothing in his community, but nevertheless, what happens? He becomes like a duke, a prince in his own home, right? So, in other words, it was understood that every man should be a boss in his own home, so what is he telling us? He's not adding it, because we know that even the lowliest person becomes a lord in his own home, okay? Of course, I don't have to tell you, this is prior to women's lib, okay? Then...
Interesting thing.
Yeah.
What?
I missed that, Irv. Sorry.
Woman's living in the Garden of Eden, right?
Yes. Yes. Right.
Adam eat the apple because the wife said to eat it.
That's right.
But in the Jewish house,
he ate of the fruit of the tree of knowledge.
Right.
Doesn't say it was an apple.
What she told him to do, he did.
But it was an apple.
Yes.
Apparently, the Haman's wife also challenges.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if you take a look later on, I mean, Zeresh comes out, and she also, you know, she's the one who gives an etzer, you know, to Haman that he should create this gallows. So, right. Yeah. All right. Now, in the second chapter, as we continue, it's written, you know, that after he calmed down, so the counselors give him the following counsel. They say, V'yafked ha-melech pekidim, let the king appoint all kinds of officials, right? And naturally, what was the function of these officials? That they were to gather all the maidens, right? It's written, if you remember the text, Nara Basula, in other words, everyone who is a virgin, okay? And who is beautiful, etc., etc., and bring them in, you know, to the king's harem over there, and where they would be placed under the charge of Hagas Misamelech, who was the guardian of the women, right? And then they were to be given all their perfumes. This is what the Megillah says. All right, so now they touch this. All right, he says, my deceive. What is the, how do you interpret, and this is a verse that we find in Proverbs, where it says, call Orum Yaseh B'Taas, V'Chesil Yifros Hivelz, which means that whoever is crafty, he knows how to act sensibly. But the fool, he spreads, folly. Okay? He says, call Orum Yaseh B'Taas, whoever is wise or crafty, you know, he does something with knowledge. And they say, who can we apply this? He says, we can apply it to Zedovit. We can apply it to David. Now, if you remember the very beginning of Melachim Aleph, right, it speaks about the fact that King David is old, right? Melach David Zokein, Bobayomim, right? He's well on in years. And then, you know, poor David is beginning to lose, you know, his powers, his faculties, and he just suffers from cold and can't warm up, all right? So what did they suggest in order to warm him up?
To bring a maiden,
right. Then she would keep him warm already. Okay. So, well, that's already a different story. Yeah.
Because he died.
Yeah. So, anyway, they're making a contrast, as we'll see in a moment, between David and Achashverosh, right? Dichsiv. Pasuk says, you know, in reference to King David, it says, Vayomru lo avodov, his servant said unto him, Yivakshu l'aduni ha-melech, let them seek for my lord the king, Na'ra besula, a virgin, right? A young lady, a young woman who is a virgin. So it says, "Call man da havale barta." Whichever Jew had a daughter, you know, who was eligible, aisa nihale, right? So he would bring her. So that carries out then the first part of the equation that we have in the Book of Proverbs. In other words, a person who is wise knows how to do things in a wise manner. So, in other words, what he did what David did, or what, you know, his servants told him to do, and so on, you know. People were thrilled with the opportunity to do what? To send, you know, to try to get their daughter eligible to be King David's handmaid, okay? But how about Uchsil Yefosif Ellis, the one that the fool spreads folly? It says, Achashverosh. This refers to Achashverosh. Dichsiv, as it's written concerning him, the Yafkeid HaMelech Bekidim. Let the king simply appoint white officials. Kol man dahavalei bato. So what happened? Whoever had a daughter, itmaraminei. They hid the daughters from the officials. They didn't want the daughter to go to Achashverosh.
In the Purim story.
Yeah?
They didn't want to go to Achashverosh.
Right, they didn't want to have their daughters go into Achashverosh's harem.
Now you're saying that in David's, in the instance of David, the people did want their daughters?
Yes, the people felt that they were honored, and so they vied with each other as to who would be selected. You understand?
So my question is, these are Hebrew maidens.
Yes.
And their Jewish parents were allowing their maidens to, and they wanted their maidens to go to the king?
Yeah. They felt it was an honor. They felt it was an honor. Say, King of Israel, and, you know, my daughter could be servant of the King of Israel. Why not?
It's
a big honor.
It's Patsan Said.
But he's a Jew.
I know.
Whereas with Achashverosh is a goy, and they figured not only that, didn't we just prove a moment ago that Achashverosh was a shaiter, he was a fool? So who wants to have a daughter exposed to a fool like Achashverosh? So when the officials came in order to try to find women for Achashverosh, right? So they hid her from him, from the official. Then, okay, so as we can see, you know, that we can see that his move, that Achashverosh's move to try to get a new queen, was not greeted with the same enthusiasm as was the case, you know, with King David. All right. Then, in the second chapter of the Megillah, it continues, Ish Yehudi Hoya B'Shushan Abira, right? Which means there was a Jewish man in Shushan, the capital. All right. Now, if we take a look at a little further in the Pasuk, we see that they call him at the end, they call him Ish Yemini, which we translate as a man came who came from the tribe of Binyamin. Okay? Of course, today Yemini could also mean somebody who's right-handed.
Right-handed.
Yemini, I mean, in Hebrew means the right hand.
Right-handed?
Yeah, yeah. But it's not the meaning over here. Here it's short for what? Binyamini, right. Instead of Binyamini, so they're called Ish Yemini. Okay. So now they're a little bit confused, and they want to explain why is he called Yehudi, and why is he also called Yemini, because Yehudi means originally not a Jew, but a member of the tribe of Judah. Okay? Right. So that being the case, how could he be both a member of the tribe of Judah and also the tribe of Binyamin, you see? This is what the question is. All right. So, all right, so Ish Yemini Michael Omar, so they say, all right, so why does it say, you know, at the end of the pasuk, Ish Yemini Michael Omar, what is the Megillah trying to bring out over here? So he says, Ili Yechusa Koosi Liyase Liyasim Ad Binyamin. If they want to show the Yichus, in other words, the genealogy of Mordechai, right? So let them go right back to Binyamin. Now, why does it say Yemini and not Binyamin? In other words, that's one thing. Secondly, Elamayshno Hani Tani Kulan Al Shmoy Nikrahu. Okay, so he says, you know what? In reality, there is a genealogy given over there because he's called Mordechai Ben Yair, right? Take a look.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, okay. You have the text from the Megillah. In front of you, right, you see where it says the Shul. It says, all right, Shmo Mordechai ben Yoir, the son of Yoir, right? Ben Shimi, the son of Shimi. Ben Kish, the son of Kish. Yishimini, and he was a Benjaminite, right? Okay. Now, they therefore now take the names, just as they did before with, you know, the advisors of Achashverosh, to try to get a meaning out of each name and to relate it to something. So they're going to do the same thing over here with the names of his yichids. Okay? Okay. So they let him go up to Binyamin. In other words, why did they simply stop, you know, with Yishimini? All right, so Ella says, Maishna Hani. Why are these particular names that are mentioned in Megillah, why are they mentioned over there? So it says, Tana Kulanal Shmo Nikru, because he says that we have a teaching which says each one of these names were they have its own significance. First of all, Ben Yair, who was the father of Mordechai, right? Yair. Now, what is Yair? Yair is a very nice name, but it means in Hebrew, someone who will give light, right? Yeah, will illuminate, will give light, and so on. So he says, why was he called that? Or why was Mordechai? You see, the point is, why was Mordechai ben Yair? So the answer is, ben Shehayir, Shehayir, Einehem, Shel Yisrael, V'Svil HaSol. The reason being that Mordechai's prayers brought brightness to the eyes of Israel. Okay? Then it says, Ben Shimi. He was the son of Shimi. So he says, what is Shimi? He says, Ben Sheshama El Tfilaso, right? Sheshama El Tfilaso, or Sheshama El Tfilaso. It's probably a better reading, okay? In other words, he was a person whom God heard his prayer, okay? Ben Kish. Kish, okay. Now, Kish over here is not something that's made with broccoli or anything special, okay. That's a different one, all right. Okay. But instead, the word Kish is related over here to the word Hikish. Hikish means to knock two things together, okay? So, therefore, what do they say? They said that... the reason why he was a descendant of Kish is because he literally knocked on the gates of mercy and they were opened unto him. You know, in heaven you have different gates, right? So you have Shari Rachamim, right? Shari Chesed, Shari Tfilah. In other words, you have all these different gates, okay? Okay. Prayer, loving kindness, mercy, and so on and so forth. So, when Mordechai prayed on behalf of the people of Israel, and he knocked at the gates of mercy, so the gates opened up, and of course it means then that God had pity upon the people of Israel, he had mercy upon them, and he gave them salvation. Okay? Yes. We'll come to it. You're running. Running ahead for a few moments. Sorry. Okay. It's all right. All right. So, then they continue, and they say, Kori Le Yehudi. Here is a Yemini, right? But at the same time, they call him Ish Yehudi, right? So, Alma Yehuda Korsi. If that's the case, wouldn't that prove that he came from Yehuda, right? The Kori La Yemini, and at the same time they also call him Yemini. So Alman Binyamin Korsi. So it shows that he came from Binyamin, right? So the question is, how could he be both a Yehudi and Yemini, right? Some Rab Nachman, so Rab Nachman said, Mordechai Muhtar Benim Musa Hoya. He says, Mordechai happened to be a person who was crowned literally with all kinds of beautiful names. This is how Rashi understands. If you take a look at the Rashi over there near the end, it says, Muhtar b'di Musa Hoya, he says, B'shemos Noin, He says he's given all kinds of beautiful names. He
Jesus
says,
is,
yeah.
Is beauty?
Yeah, yeah, I'll come to it in 1 second. Okay. I'm first of all interpreting Rashi.
Okay.
Okay. All right.
No,
yeah.
Fine,
all right. So he says, Nimus, he says, shame, it means a name, Vilashon Yovan, in the Greek language. Okay. Now, this would be fine, except that, you know, Rashi was not the world's greatest Greek scholar. He was a wonderful scholar. He knew.
Yeah, right.
I should only know only 1/1,000,000th of what Rashi knew. That would be good. But when it came to Greek, you know, he had to rely upon other people. Okay. The word nemos that you're referring to, mm-hmm. it's actually from the Greek word nomos. Nomos means law.
Law, no kidding.
Law,
law. Interesting.
Yeah, yeah. Right.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's the meaning of the word nomos. So the question is, so how do you say a name in Greek? So the answer is onoma.
What
was that? Onoma. Onoma. That's how you have the word onomatopoeia, which means that the name is based on the activity. You see, yeah, that's what it would mean in Greek. Okay. Right, right. Yeah. Or anonymous. What is anonymous? Ah, in Greek means no. So anonymous means that you don't have any name. Right, without a name and so on. So, okay. But I understand what Rashi is trying to say. He's trying to say.
Would NYM as in synonym?
Yeah. They're the same thing, right.
Name?
Syn in Greek
name.
Means with, literally. So
yeah.
That means that it has, it's a name that accompanies, it's together with the other. They both mean the same thing in this particular case.
Okay.
Right. Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
We had a whole series of NYMs on the wordsmith last week.
Yeah. Okay.
Right.
God's fine.
Well,
all right. I thank God I studied Greek once upon a time.
Right. And I knew it had to, something to do with but you just brought it up.
Yeah.
And it's exactly, I have a note. Check for the meaning of a suffix NYM.
Yeah.
For sure. And
right.
You just gave it to me.
Yeah.
Yeah, you learn all kinds, including Greek.
Right. Okay. Fine. Thank you, Rashi. Okay.
But you said
he
wasn't so good in Greek.
All right. Today we use the word nemos exactly along the lines of person who acts politely, nicely, and so on. He behaves, but as I said, that's from the word nomos in Greek, which means, you know, he does everything according to the rule, according to the law. He does what is right. Okay? Yeah.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
Thank you, Doctor.
You're welcome. Okay. All right. Omar Rabbi Baruch Chana, Omar Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi. Okay. So he tries to give a different explanation. He says, Ovi ben Binyamin, v'yima b'Yehuda. Very simple solution. We know the Yich is from the father, and the father Taka was from Binyamin. But you know who his mother was? She was a woman who came from the tribe of Yehuda. So that way you could be called both Binyamin, you know, Yemini and Yehudi. God's fine. Okay. Pardon me?
I mean, Hebrews use the father's name, not mother's name.
Yeah. The truth of the matter is that we find in the Bible sometimes that it's the mother's name who's used and not the father's name. Sometimes we find that. Particularly true
lineage,
among the...
her lineage is a direct lineage, well, like Ruth.
Right.
You know, if the lineage is, it has an important connection.
Right.
So they use the female lineage. Am I right about that?
All right. Well, I'm thinking more specifically the fact that, for example, among kings... they very often gave the name of the mother. Why? For the simple reason that very often the man, you know, a king could have more than one wife.
True. Look at
Saudi
Arabians today.
Right, right.
Look at Solomon.
So under those circumstances, so very often they gave the name of the mother then rather than the name
so
of the father.
Which line
right.
They
right. Course. Yeah. Course. Okay.
But wasting time. As a counter argument, you could raise the issue of when the tribe of Manasseh what? Came to Moshe. I believe it was Menashe, but maybe it was Dan. Came to Moshe with regard to the daughters of Zelophehad. And they said, in effect, well,
yeah, they were the son of the tribe of Menashe. Yeah.
Wasn't Menashe. Okay.
It was Menashe.
They said,
yeah.
Look, I'm getting to my point, but we don't want the daughters to marry outside our tribe because then their lands will go.
That's correct. The lands
tribe.
Will be added to a different tribe. So that's correct.
From there, I think you can infer that lineal descent relating the tribes of Israel was defined by the males.
Okay. All right. We learned actually in the Gemara in Tainus, okay, that there was a holiday called the 15th day of Av. If you remember, the last daf or so of Tainus, okay? Mm-hmm. Holiday that we have the 15th day of Av. And they give different reasons why the 15th day of Av was a simcha. Okay? Pardon me?
No, I'm just thinking of the pronunciation of Torah.
Of what?
I didn't understand what you were talking about.
I said Tainus.
Tainus.
Ta'anit. Okay. If you insist, it's Ta'anit. I'm pronouncing it the way, you know, pre-Israeli pronunciation. So the Gemara Tainus is the way, okay. Of course, in Yiddish, the word Tainus can also have a different meaning.
Right.
As well.
Yeah.
But they're spelled differently.
Let me just wait a little. What is Tainus for you? What does Tainus mean? Just means fast
argument.
Or what? Argument? Argument is in Yiddish?
In Yiddish, right, it means
Ta'ana.
Ta'ana.
Oh, with a ta.
Yeah, with a tet, right. Well,
okay, all right.
The other one is with a ta.
Sure.
And that, of course, means a fast, as we know.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, and the thing about it, if you have tinus with your wife, you're going to have a fast.
That's right.
Right.
That's going to feed you.
I like that. Very good.
A tinus leads to a tinus.
Right, absolutely. So, at any rate, we learned over there that various reasons why the 15th day of Av was a big yontif, okay? Remember, it was Sadie Hawkins Day too, if you recall, right?
Right.
Okay. The girls would dance and say, Bacher, take a look at me. Marry for beauty, marry for yichas, whatever you mean, right? Marry for the sake of Umeida Shalelem, marry to have children, and so on and so forth, okay? At any rate, one of the things that they mentioned, why it was a yontif, is because on that particular day, they abolished, so to speak, this ruling that existed only at the time of the Kibush Haaretz, the time of the conquest of the land. Then this business of marrying within the tribe itself was enforced. But once they had conquered the land and divided the land according to the various parcels and so on, you understand?
I understand.
From that point on, then permission was given, you know, to for Jews to marry regardless of what the tribe was. Okay? So that was one of the reasons. Right. All right. So that only applied, as I said, to the, the generation that conquered and divided Eretz Israel. Okay?
That allowed the tribes to mix and marry between themselves. But did it abolish the marking of the descent according to the males?
No.
Okay, so it's still held. Even so, the two Av did not abolish that.
No.
Okay, it's
not
about that.
So, as I say, I mean, we have,
from
you know.
There you could argue that his father was a man.
Normally,
really
when we take a look at the Yichas in the Bible, we see that it's the father's name given. But very often in royalty, as I said, you will find that they give the name of the mother as well. Or they'll even call the child by the mother's name, okay?
Sure.
Yeah.
What was the source of this war that intermarry between tribes? It was prophetic, or it was...
Yeah, obviously. Of course it was prophetic.
So
I mean, they had prophets in those days, too, you see. So, obviously it was permissible, you know. And this happened, in other words, during the time of the judges. It happened, or the Zakenim happened after the generation that had conquered Eretz Israel together with Yoshua Bittu. It happened after that. Okay? All right. So, let us continue right now. Another reason. Why does it say Yehudi and why does it say Yemini? Right? Rabbanan Amre, they have a different opinion that they voice. What did they say? They said, Mishpochas Mizgorizu Bizu. The various families were in competition with each other. Mishpachas Yehuda Omeres Ana Garmed Miselid Mordechai. I am responsible for the fact that Mordechai was born. Why? The Lokatle David Lishimi Ben Geva. The reason being that David, who, remember, was from the tribe of Yehuda, right, did not kill Shimei, did not execute the Shimei ben Gera, who happened to curse David and so on, but nevertheless, David spared his life, okay?
He was one who did what?
He was killed by Shlomo.
King David spared the life of Shimei ben Gera,
yeah, what
okay?
What
did he do?
Yeah.
He cursed King David, he jeered at him. If you remember, King David was Aftzoris with his son Avshalom.
Oh, yeah.
Okay? And Avshalom was winning the war against King David. In fact, David had to flee from Yerushalayim, okay, and try to find refuge. So Shimei ben Gera jeered at him because Shimei ben Gera was from the tribe of Binyamin, and he jeered at him. Because, incidentally, I may add, there was a rivalry between Binyamin and Yehud. Why was there a rivalry? The very first king of Israel was who? Shaul. And who was he? He was of the tribe of Binyamin. Okay? So that there were loyalists to the house of King Shaul, right? Who resented the fact that, you know, David was now the king in place of Shaul. Okay. So Shimon ben Gera obviously was one of them, and I guess he was happy, you know, being a member of the tribe of Binyamin, that David was Aftzoris. Okay.
Who was Avshalom's mother? Was it Michal, was it? No, Michal was Avshalom. Who was the mother then? Which tribe was she from?
It was, what's her name again? Tell you in a second. Abigail.
Abigail.
Abigail,
right.
Abigail,
the mother of
Absalom. Yeah, in English you say Abigail, but in Hebrew it's Abigail, right?
Yeah, he met her, but only
yeah,
he had met her sort of on a journey. But what tribe
yeah,
was he from?
So she was rather young when she was
I'm just trying to see if there's a connection.
Yeah.
I don't remember.
In the case of Abigail, if you remember, that was the case where she had a husband whose name was Nabal.
Right, Nabal.
In Hebrew means, you know, a rotten character, okay?
Right.
It's a Nabal. And, you know, she said, you know, David asked, send me, help me, you know, in dire straits. And Nabal said, I'll have nothing to do with you, he says. You come, you know, I'll fix you up. So at any rate, Abigail came secretly to David, if you remember, in order to try to pacify him. And she said, you know, Nabal hu v'Nabal shmo. He is Nabal, you know, he's taka a Nabal, right?
Right.
In other words, he's a rotten character, and his name is Nabal.
Right.
Okay. And so after Nabal died, so David took Abigail as one of his wives, okay? Yeah.
So
he had six wives, David.
Right.
Okay.
I remember also there's a point where Nabal sees either Abigail tells Nabal about David or Nabal sees David and Abigail, and there's a phrase where his heart turns to stone, where his heart was very heavy. Do you remember this?
That was the husband, right?
Right.
Nabal,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Because he heard, you know, that his wife had, you know, tried to. Had gone to see King David. Actually, David wasn't king yet at that time. Shaul was still the king at that
time. Do Jewish people use the name Abigail very often because it's a
Abigail.
It is?
It's a very nice name, but, you know, it became the kind of a name that you find among the good Protestants. Right. The good name in New England.
Puritans, right. But there's a song, there's a very nice song in Israel, Shmuel's mother. But like there's an Abigail who's singing by a campfire. So it's there, but it's not probably the most popular.
Right.
Not that popular.
But there happens to be, you know, a lot of people like to take one of the names of David's wives and give it to their daughter.
Right.
Hagit and so on.
Michal. That word related to novella that they use.
Right. Not really Menuval.
No,
spelled a little different. That's spelled with Naval. Whereas Nivala, Ki Nivala of Israel, was a terrible thing. Shechem, if you remember, he raped Dina and so on, and the brothers were angry about because they said Ki Nivala of Israel, right?
I didn't hear the meaning of Naval.
Naval means somebody who is a rotten character.
No good thing.
Okay.
So we don't know what tribe Abigail is from, or Abigail.
Well, that's not mentioned what tribe she's from.
Fine,
okay.
Fine,
but,
anyway,
getting back to Shimi, right? So they say this Shimi ben Gera was an ancestor of whom? Of Mordechai. Right. Okay. So the very fact that Yehuda did a favor for Binyamin by the fact that David of the tribe of Yehuda did not punish Shimi ben Gera with death for acting as he did towards him. Okay? Therefore, that enabled what? That enabled Shimi ben Gera to live, to have children, and in turn, right, to be an ancestor of Mordechai. Okay. I have to point out, actually, quite a few centuries intervened between one and the other. What we're talking about this.
That he's an honorary Yehudi.
He's an honorary Yehudi. Right, okay.
Doctor, I also have a question, at least more. You remember, we read this Haftorah, or either we're going to read it in a couple of weeks, the famous thing where David says to Shlomo, he says, don't let Shimi go down to his grave, bring him down into his grave.